I don't know whether it's the same around Cheshire, but when I was a teacher up in the northeast, there was one song, one kid's song you could guarantee that every kid in every primary school knew, which was Be Bold, Be Strong. Now, I'm a bit croaky this morning, so I won't sing it for you, but you probably know the song, Be Bold, Be Strong, for the Lord your God is with you. I think our kids sing it as well. I guess most of us have sung it, and even those who aren't Christians have sung it. But I also guess many of us wouldn't describe ourselves as bold or strong Christians. The other week, I was waiting at the barber's to have my hair cut, and the guy before me was pontificating about how religion was the cause of all wars in the world. And so I was trying to keep my head down. And the barber turned around to me and said, "What do you say to that?" He knew I was a pastor, and he wasn't just being facetious. He was genuinely interested in what my response was. And I knew I'd have to give an answer. On the way down, I prayed that God would give me an opportunity. I don't know why, but whenever I get my hair cut, that tends to happen. But if I'm honest, I was doing it through gritted teeth. I really didn't want to have a conversation that morning. I just wanted to have my hair cut, go home and get on with my life. I certainly didn't want to have this a very difficult conversation with someone who thought religion was the cause of all evil. I share that because I guess most of you are the same. Even though at small group you pray that you'd have opportunities to talk about Jesus to your colleagues, day by day throughout your weeks, you are pretty keen that that doesn't happen. You don't want to be put into that situation. You want to keep your head down as a Christian. Never have to stand out. Never have to defend your cause. You probably think some other people find it easy. That there's people in the church who find it easy to talk about Jesus. Well, I don't. I'm not sure I ever will. I still feel nervous every time I've got to stand up at a carol service or anything like that. And I imagine for 95% of the people around you, that's the same as well. And yet with Christmas coming, a lot of us have got to be bolder than we normally are. We've got to invite people to carol services. We've got to go and talk to strangers at services. Or we've got to even share the gospel with people who've never heard it before. And if you're like me, you need to learn how to be bold and be strong this time of year. Well, in this unusual passage, we have a few examples of bold servants of God. Now, depending on your translation, they might be called David's mighty warriors or the more traditional David's mighty men. They really did have to be bold. They had to put their bodies on the line to defend God's kingdom, much more than we have to do when we invite people to a carol service or whatever. But as well as describing these men's activities in war, we're also given three reasons why we should be bold like them. Despite all the differences between us and them, these reasons can still inspire us to be bold at this time of year and throughout our Christian lives. So first we're told, be bold, for God remembers the individuals. Now, because it was Beth's first time, she had enough difficult names to begin with, I thought I wouldn't make her read verses 24 to 39. But if you have a look at it, there is a lot of names there. There's the 30 additional people, and we're given all of their details. It's a long passage, and it's full of names that we don't know. There's only one name that you'll recognize, and we'll get to that in a second. But interestingly enough, it's not that these men were famous once upon a time, and we've lost who they were. By the time 2 Samuel was written, which you've got to always remember, was after the Jews had come back from exile. So this is hundreds of years later. They wouldn't have known who these men were either. Maybe if they were particularly interested in genealogy, they might have some connection to one of these men, but they wouldn't have known anything about them. This list was probably recorded at David's time. The historian who wrote 2 Samuel found it, decided to include it, but he could easily have left it out. He must have left out hundreds of details, hundreds of documents. So why does he, and more importantly, why does God want to record a list of names that no one is ever going to know anything about? Well, these kind of lists of unknown people come up a lot in the Bible. So a few examples. There's a list of the temple musicians who played in the temple when Solomon was king. There's a list of those who built the wall with Nehemiah and which walls they built. There's a list of people that Paul knew in the Roman church, many of which we don't know today. the Holy Spirit knew that most of the people reading the Bible would not know who those people were. So why did he bother to inspire these long lists of boring names? Well, I had a friend whose dad used to watch movies right the way through to the credits every single time. As an 8-year-old going and watching a movie with my best mate, it was always a little bit embarrassing that we had to sit there during the credits when everyone else had gone, when the attendants are there cleaning and sweeping up the popcorn all around you. But he was really firm about this. He felt really strongly. He said every single one of those people on those credits made the film that I enjoyed. And I think they at least deserve to have their names read. So that's what we had to do every single time. Well, in the same sense, it's like that with these lists of names. Doesn't matter if we know them or not. They served God. And God made sure their name would be remembered for the rest of history. I'm sure if your name was written in the Bible, you'd want it to be read as well. But why do these warriors deserve remembering? All they seem to be good at is killing people. That doesn't seem particularly honourable. Well, you've got to remember at this time in history, God had commanded this. God was glorified by the winning of the land for him. Now, at different points in history, when there are different commands from God, different people's names are remembered. So going back to what I mentioned before, when building the temple was the most important thing, those who built the temple had their names remembered. When serving in the Roman church was important, the people who served in the Roman church, their names were remembered, and all the others who worked alongside Paul. The battle now for us is very different than it was for these mighty men. Paul says in the New Testament when he describes the armour of God, our struggle is not against flesh and blood. We're not to be fighting wars nowadays, which is part of the answer I gave to that guy sat in the barber's chair that day. Our job as Christians is to fight our temptations now and to fight the lies of the devil by proclaiming the good news. But it's still a fight nonetheless. These men are praised not just because they fought, but because they were courageous in the service of God. So, for example, Josheb Bashabeth, a Tehekamite in verse 8, he raised his spear against 800 men. So he killed 800 men in one encounter. It's pretty impressive. Eleazar, he stood his ground when the rest of Israel had retreated. It was the same with Shammah in verse 11. Abishai killed 300 men with a spear on his own. And Benaiah, he killed a whole list of people. He killed Moab's mightiest warriors. He killed a lion. He defeated an Egyptian with a club when the Egyptian had a spear. And he was in charge of David's bodyguards. So the challenge of the day was fighting. And these men particularly excelled in fighting in difficult situations where they had to have great courage. Now for the others in that long list from verse 24 onwards, they're singled out because they were just part of this group of 30 men who stuck with David through thick and thin. Now, you might not remember the start of these mighty warriors, but when David was on the run from Saul, a few ne'er-do-wells kind of gathered around him. Most of them were a bit rough and ready and were probably outlaws already. It was a bit like Robin Hood and his merry men. They kind of gathered around. But they stuck with David all the way through from the Saul days right to the end. And so I'm sure many of them died along the way. They're all remembered as having been faithful to David all the way through his reign. Now, they didn't do it to get their names recorded in the Bible. But isn't it good to know that God knows the names of everyone who serves him, even if no one else remembers? It's good to remember that ourselves when we do service that nobody sees. I wonder if you ever feel like you don't get any recognition for the things that you're doing in your Christian life. There's lots of people who are bold as Christians who never get their deeds recognized. Nobody hands out rewards to the person who is putting leaflets in down their road, even though they're kind of shy and feeling tense every time they have to put one through a door. No one ever hands out rewards to the person who invites their friends to the Christmas carol service and gets a no. Or the teenage girl who sits fielding apologetic questions from a friend when she just wants to disappear into the background. Nobody sees that. But God sees it. And he knows the names of all those that have served him. Interestingly, there's a name at the end of that long list from verse 24 to 39 that does matter to you. You will recognize it. Verse 39 is mentioned Uriah the Hittite. I think he's put last because he's the one that you will know. Uriah the Hittite was the man who was married to Bathsheba before David killed him so he could make Bathsheba his own wife. Not only did Uriah not get any thanks, Uriah was put to death when it was convenient to David. David massively let him down. But God remembered Uriah. And he will remember anyone who does the right thing, even when they get no recognition from those around them. You can bring that to mind when you do what no one is recognizing. When you think, no one knows how hard it is in my home right now. Well, God knows. Nobody knows how much time it takes me to do all the behind-the-scenes work I do for church. Well, God does. Nobody knows how much time I'm on my knees praying for events. Well, God does. We're to remember that. Now, you might think you're too holy to think about that. Oh, I'd do it even if God didn't remember it. Well, that's more holy than Jesus tells you to be. Because when Jesus is talking about secret activities, he talks about giving in secret and praying in secret and fasting in secret. And he doesn't say, just do this because it's the right thing. He doesn't say you shouldn't be looking for any recognition. He says, don't look for the recognition of the people on earth. Look for the recognition of your Father. He says, after each of saying to do each of those things in secret, then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. We're to remember that God sees when no one else sees, and that he will reward us. Knowing that should lead us to be like these mighty warriors. You'll be glad to know that doesn't mean that you have to go and fight 800 men with a spear. But there are many times where you're going to have to get out of your comfort zone. Everyone may call you hateful, but you're going to stand for the truth. Everyone may think you're doing nothing, but you're going to do those secret duties. Everyone may be unaware of how much money you generously give and you keep doing it. Why? Because our names are recorded in heaven by our Heavenly Father. Be bold, for God remembers individuals. And before we go on to the next point, I'm just going to read this list of names to remember that God knows all the names of those who serve here as well. So verse 24, among the 30 were Asahel, the brother of Joab, Elhanan, son of Dodo from Bethlehem, Shama the Haradite, Elikah the Haradite, Helez the Peltite, Ira, son of Ikesh from Tekoa, Abiezer from Anathoth, Sibekai the Hushathite, Zalmon the Ahohite, Maharai the Netophathite, Heled, son of Baana the Netophathite, Ithai, son of Ribai from Gibeah in Benjamin, Benaiah the Pirathonite, Hidai from the ravines of Gash, Abialbon the Arabathite, Asmaveth the Barhumite, Eliaiba the Shahalabalite, the sons of Jashen, Jonathan, son of Shammah the Harahite, Ahiam, son of Shalara the Harahite, Eliphelet, son of Ahabshabai the Mahakathite, Eliam, son of Ahithophel the Gilonite, Hezro the Carmelite, Pa'ari the Arbite, Igal the son of Nathan from Zobah, the son of Hagri, Zelek the Ammonite, Nahari the Birathite, the armor bearer of Joab, son of Zeruah, Ira the Ithrite, Gareb the Ithrite, and Uriah the Hittite. There were 37 in all. And we're grateful for those men, for the fighting that they did to make sure that David stayed alive so that he could have a son. Who could have a son, who could have a son, who could have a son, that eventually a son of David might rule over the universe. Be bold, for God remembers individuals. Secondly, be bold, for God brings the victory. As impressive as the actions of these individuals were, we aren't the only ones to praise the ones who did them. We're not just to praise them, we're to praise their God. So verse 10, when we're hearing about Eleazar, it says, Eleazar stood his ground and struck down the Philistines till his hand grew tired and froze to the sword. About 5 minutes if he was outside this morning, but probably a bit longer if he's in Israel. The Lord brought about a great victory that day. Eleazar, what a man. You know, he's standing there, he's fighting until he can't even loosen his grip on the sword. But It's not him that gets the glory. The Lord brought about a great victory that day. And verses 11 to 12, next to him was Shammah, son of Agi, the Hararite. When the Philistines banded together at a place where there was a field full of lentils, Israel's troops fled from them. But Shammah took his stand in the middle of the field. He defended it and struck the Philistines down, and the Lord brought a great victory. Now, it probably makes you laugh silently inside that he stood and fought for a field of lentils, you know. It's not the kind of thing that gets remembered like the Battle of Waterloo or anything like that. But actually, lentils were food, and food was vitally important in those days. If you didn't have a staple part of your diet, well, then hundreds of people could have died. He stood and he risked his life for lentils, as strange as that seems, so that God's people could have the food they needed. And now again, the one who gets the glory for that is the Lord who brought about a great victory. Now, it doesn't say that for each one, but that doesn't mean that some of these men did it on their own and some of them did it with God's help. It's just that God is showing that through these men's strength and their toughness and their resilience, he was at work. And that means he gets the ultimate glory for each one of these actions. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't a certain degree of recognition that these men get. For example, in verse 19, we're told about Abishai. Was he not held in greater honor than the three? He became their commander, even though he was not included among them. It's not wrong to give men and women honor for the deeds that they do for God's glory. Some Christians act like that's the case. The Bible's not against honouring those who do the right thing, who serve for God. So, for example, it's not wrong for us to say thank you to the people who work in the kitchen at community lunch because they might get too big-headed and, you know, take glory from God. It's ridiculous. There are times it's right to honour individuals for the service that they've given. But the ultimate glory beyond that temporary glory goes to God. And that's right because who's the one who gave the strength to these mighty men? It's their creator. And it's the same with any deed that is done. Any great preacher was only great because the Spirit accompanied his preaching. A rich man is only generous because of the riches that God gave him. A prayer warrior prays because God answers prayer and hears it. Everything we do for God is a gift from his hand, which is marvelous when you think about it, because God's going to reward us for the deeds we did by his strength. It's a bit like giving a child a pat on the back for making a cookie when you made the entire cookie yourself. That's basically how it works with God. But also, when we realize that God receives is the one who brings about the victory, it enables us to be bolder than we'd be in normal circumstances. We might be talking to someone and think, it is impossible that this person would ever respond to the gospel. But we can do it because we know the Lord's on our side. He wants to change someone's heart, he can do it in an instant. Doesn't matter how firm an atheist they happen to be or how strong their arguments are. God will win them over. We can fight against our own sin, even though it seems like something we'll never resist, we'll never change, because God brings the victory. He's able to sustain us in ways that we could never imagine. When we know that God brings the victory, we have the strength to be bold in the most fearsome of situations. And that is indeed what Jesus tells us, doesn't he? When Jesus gives the great commission to his disciples, he gives them very similar instructions, doesn't he, to the ones that are given to Joshua and many of the warriors in the Old Testament. Matthew 28, when Jesus is giving the great commission to his disciples, he says this: "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you." There's the command. "And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." I'm with you. Be strong and courageous because I go with you and I will bring you the victory. Well, the final thing we see in this passage is that we should be bold because God receives the glory. We're going to zoom into one story in particular, which is verses 13 to 17. Let me read it for you again and explain what's going on. Verse 13. During harvest time, three of the 30 chief warriors came down to David at the cave of Adullam, while a band of Philistines was encamped in the valley of Rephaim. At that time, David was in the stronghold, and the Philistine garrison was at Bethlehem. David longed for water and said, "Oh, that someone would get me a drink of water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem." David's on the outskirts of Bethlehem. The Philistines are in Bethlehem. Now, Bethlehem's the town of David. It's the town where David was born and where he grew up. Yes, that's a little hint for the Christmas story, but you can come back to that in a few weeks. But this town is currently occupied by the Philistines. And David's upset by that. And he just says in a kind of offhand way, "Oh, if only I could get a glass of water from the well in Bethlehem." Now, he's not saying, of all the things in the world that I want the most, I want a glass of water or a cup of water from Bethlehem. He's just saying, "I wish we could win this battle." But these men are so loyal to David that when they hear that command, they think, "All right, we're going to get him that cup of water." So this is what happens, verse 16. So the three mighty warriors broke through the Philistine lines, drew water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem, and carried it back to David. But he refused to drink it. Instead, he poured it out before the Lord. "Far be it from me, Lord, to do this," he said. "Is it not the blood of men who went at risk of their lives?" And David would not drink it. Such were the exploits of the three mighty warriors. I mean, these guys, they're absolute lads, aren't they? They're just willing to break through an army, go and get a cup of water and bring it back. That's how strong they are. That's how courageous they are. That's how loyal they are to their king, David. Now, just as a side point, isn't that a challenge for us? Because who's our king? Jesus. And he is much more worthy of honor than David. And when Jesus gives a command, he doesn't sort of say in an offhand way, "Oh, I'd love to have a cup of water from Gaza Strip or something like that." When he gives us a command, there's always a reason behind it. Are we like these men when God tells us to do something, saying, "Yes, Lord, I'm there"? Or are we ones who are we always questioning? We're always thinking of reasons not to do it. These men were willing to obey as soon as they were given the command. But back to this story, what David does with that drink is interesting, isn't it? Because he gets this cup of water and he pours it on the ground. And you might think, well, for all these men have been through, how dare you just chuck the water away? But what he's saying is that this water now represents what these men have done. They've risked their lives for me. And I'm not worthy of their lives. The only one who's worthy of the blood of these men, of these men's lives being poured out, is God himself. And so he pours it out as a drink offering. Now, what would sometimes happen in the Old Testament, there were lots of different sacrifices, but one kind of sacrifice you had was a thank offering, which is basically you're grateful to God for something. And so you go to the temple and you sacrifice something valuable to you to God. So it might have been an animal. Here's our best bull. We're going to give it to God to say thank you to God. And one of the things you could do is get your best bottle of wine and pour it on the floor to say, "God, I thank you. I'm grateful for you and all that you've done. Here, take this. This is something that I would enjoy, that would bring me pleasure, but you deserve it instead because of all that you've done for me." And that's what he does with this water. He says, "This thing, which has been worth so much, I'm going to pour out to you. I'm going to give to you and your glory." Now, in the New Testament, we're told that we're to be living sacrifices. So if you were here on Sunday evening last week, we thought about this. The priest, now Jesus has come, is not whoever stands at the front in the church. It's all believers. And the sacrifices we do isn't killing animals and pouring out wine on the floor or cups of water. It's to be living sacrifices, to live in a way that's glorifying to God's. And so what we're to do when we see the greatness of God is we're to give our very best, all the things we value, to him and his glory. Our thank you offering might be to say, "God, I love you so much that I'm going to tell my friend to come along to this event, even though I think they'll probably say no. I'm going to share the gospel with someone, even though it's very awkward. I'm going to trust in you when I find it difficult." And that's helpful if you're nervous like me about doing those things, because it helps you to remember why you're doing it. You're not doing it to tick a box. You know the JWs who go around and knock on doors? They actually don't care that much whether you become a JW or not. They've just got a quota to fill in, I'm told. And there may be some who are doing it genuinely, but there is a bit of a, this is a work that you've got to complete. We're not to do things like that. We tell people about Jesus because we love Jesus. We think he's so valuable that he deserves all of our praise, all of our glory. It can also be helpful if you're bold for the wrong reason. Some people are bold and courageous, but they're not bold and courageous because they want to glorify God. They're bold and courageous because they're proud. They want to show everyone that they have no fear. We need to remind ourselves whenever we do something for God's glory, that it's for God's glory and not for our own. So let me sum up. What does this mean to you? Well, let me talk to four different groups of people this morning. Well, three groups of people here this morning, one of them in heaven, which is Jesus. First of all, if you're not a Christian this morning, sometimes it can take boldness to admit, I was wrong to say God doesn't exist. Or to be bold enough to say, yeah, I am actually going to look to see whether this is true. It can be slightly embarrassing. You may have to tell your family that you're looking into Christianity, your friends, your colleagues, and you've not even believed in him yet. That can be quite awkward. That can be quite difficult. Well, if Jesus is the one who gave his life for you, then much more than these men gave everything for David, then surely it's worth at least seeing whether that's real. Have the boldness to take that first step to find out more about him. If you're a new Christian, they may reach a point where you realize, okay, I'm not just figuring this out anymore, trying to figure out if Jesus is real anymore. No, I am actually a Christian. And actually, that can be quite a difficult thing to say. It can be difficult to go from that point of saying, I'm maybe a Christian, I'm figuring things out, say, no, I actually believe, to actually expressing your faith in baptism, to actually tell your friends and colleagues that you've changed your mind, that you're now a Christian. Tell your family members. That could be a tough thing. But when you think about that, and you think about whether you're going to be a secret, hidden away Christian or one that admits what they believe, just ask yourself, does God deserve it? Because as these men considered David to be worthy of their lives for a cup of water, surely we should see that God is worth any sacrifice he asks of us. And then for those of us who are established Christians, it can be tempting to get to a stage where we withdraw from difficult situations. It can be quite safe in church, can't it? You can come along to things, you can hear about God, and you never have to take a bold step. Do something that's difficult. Maybe that act of boldness is evangelism. Maybe that act of boldness is tackling a sin that's been a problem in your life for a long time. And maybe there's other things that God is putting on your heart right now. It can be difficult sometimes to gee ourselves up to do that. But we've got to use the means that are described in this passage. You can remember that God rewards all those secret deeds that are done to his glory. We can remember that he's the one who brings the victory, even if we don't think we can do it ourselves. And we ultimately remember that he deserves it. He deserves God's glory for all that he's done for us. And finally, this passage reminds us of Jesus. Ultimately, David and Jesus are the same in this story. But there is a sense in which Jesus is also like these mighty men. They put their lives on the line for the glory of God. But Jesus gave up his life. He had his soul go through the agony of the forsakenness of God for our sin. Jesus was the mightiest warrior there ever was. Because he was a warrior that didn't wield a sword, but he had his hands and his feet pierced and his soul separated, in a sense, in that moment from God. Jesus was the greatest mighty warrior, and that is why he deserves our obedience, he deserves our praise, and he deserves all the glory that we can give to him.